People, we are back with more Fantasia International Film Festival coverage, and this one is lit. We had to come strong, and people, we do. We have got a look at a new film, and then a sit down with the creators of it. So sit back, because this is a fantastic voyage, people. Okay, so yes, we will start off with a look at Where the Devil Roams, the new film from the Addams Family. Yes, people. So I was really happy to be able to check this film out, right? It is Where the Devil Roams. It is the new Addams Family joint. And you know what I mean? Huge fan. We spoke to them back in February 2022, right? Episode 188, I believe. And that was for Hellbender. And I loved Hellbender. So, you know, in that conversation, they mentioned they've got new projects coming. So I've been keeping an eye out. So, yeah, I was like, oh, you know what I mean? The new joint is having its world premiere at Fantasia. Outstanding. So Where the Devils Roam is written and directed by John Zelda Addams and Toby Poser. Right, Toby also produces the film. What's homie's name? Trey Lindsay handles the VFX and special effects and all of that kind of jazz. So yeah, that's you know, there's a lot of great, you know, little things in here. Our cast, as always, right? We got Zelda, John, Toby, they're starring in it. Lulu, you know, she makes an appearance, the other daughter, Lulu Addams. We've got Sam Rod, he plays Mr. Tips. We have got Robert Lund as Farmer Ned. Right, there is also Hitomi Nakarora, who is the Japanese drumming lady in the film. Okay, so we've also got Razor de Rockefeller, who plays the tattooed peekaboo ukulele strumming Rocky. And yeah, she's pretty cool. You've got Justin Julio as the master of ceremonies, who we see, I believe he's at the very beginning, you know, of the piece, which is really interesting, right? Really interesting. And it was just a crazy way to open this up. So yeah, that is the cast of this very enjoyable film and what it's about. Well, in the dregs of Depression era America, a family of performers travels a cold, dying carnival circuit. Father Seven likes books. Mother Maggie's fond of hammers. Daughter Eve prefers scissors. On stage, Dark Angel Eve sings for their supper. But off stage, their bloody side act is booming. Maggie slays, Seven closes his eye. Eve captures the carnage with her Kodak. They've got a 31 Chevy, some potatoes for stew, and they've got each other. When the family's bond is severed by a violent comeuppance. Whew. Eve is there to pick up the pieces. She steals dark magic from the sinister finger cutting carny Mr. Tips, who's got to deal with the devil. But with every cut, Eve must sew and sew again. While the family's act grows more desperate, more gruesome, their audience grows too. As their fate dangles in the spotlight, they find themselves in a tricky dance with the devil. Oh my gosh, right? Oh my gosh. It sounds very intriguing. And the way this film, right, it starts off, we have black and white. It's black and white, and we have the master of ceremony, you know, get on stage, and he hits us with this soliloquy, this poem. And it's very, the delivery is great. Delivery is great, but it's just like, oh man, you hear the poem, and it's just like, yo, I mean, this is uncomfortable, right? What does this mean? Where is this going? So we have the poem, right? And then we play it back and we're hearing this noise. And you're like, and the music is playing, and we're just like, what is this noise? And as the camera pans up and we see what this noise is, you're just like, Oh no. You know what I mean? It's just like, oh my God. Right? But it's like, yo, if the film is opening like this, oh, what's in store, people? What's in store? So we, you know what I mean? We hit the music and now we're there. We're following Eve as she's walking and going to the store. Right, and there's this weird kind of stillness about Eve, right? This calm, but it feels like a bird on a lake, right? A bird on a lake, that would be a duck, right? It was like a duck. Right, looks kind of graceful on the surface, but underneath there's all this kicking. And that's it with Eve, man. You're looking at Eve and you're thinking, feels very chill on the surface, but you know there's some shit going on beneath. So you're intrigued. And coupled with all of this, we get the music, right? And if you've seen any Addams Family joint, you know that as well as acting and telling great stories, these cats can sing. And, oh, shit, we got some catchy-ass songs. Man, I'm feeling the songs. It's just like, yo, that slaps, man. I'm digging it, right? So we just have this story, and it's just... Ooh, there's a sinister tilt, right? There's, you know, we start off and it just feels like it's this family of performers trying to make ends meet. You know, we're in a carnival with all the misfits and freaks looking to perform, you know, and shit. Right, we just know through history that these things were huge, and then it all stopped. People found different forms of entertainment, right? So it just looks like they're on the death keel of it all, trying to make things work. But we're getting to know this family, and it just feels like there's this real tight bond. Yeah, but then we're seeing more and more things happen, and you're just like, okay, all right, maybe this ain't a family to cross, right? This ain't a family to fuck with. So it's just intriguing. The Mr. Tips thing. You're just like, oh, right? There's up to that point, the film could be a certain thing. Then we see this, and you're just like, oh, shit. Okay, we're dealing with some other stuff, man. We're dealing with some other stuff. And it's fascinating because, like, you're seeing a lot of grime. We're seeing a lot of grime. But there's something about these motherfuckers where you are kind of still rooting for them. You know what I mean? You're still rooting for them. So it's fascinating. It's fascinating. And I mean, there's a scene where Zelda, well, Eve even, chops the hand off a doll, right? Simple little scene. Chops the hand off the doll. The expression, though. Oh my God. It's chilling. It's chilling. And that's the great thing about this. A lot of times, it's just the nuance of an expression. Right, a turn of phrase, a body movement that just gives you so much. Right, at the dinner, it was just a switch in Maggie, which was just like, oh shit. Right, oh shit. It was fantastic. Fantastic. Lulu makes an appearance, which was great. Right? Because I'm watching, I'm like, yo, where the fuck Lulu at? Right? And then, yeah, that the way she comes in is just like, oh man. Oh man, it's just fantastic. And then just all the other cast, right? Like the tattooed woman, the drummer woman, the Mr. Tip, just all these other characters. They're great. They're fun. They add this different dimension to the piece, you know. And although we don't get to see a lot of some of them, still they light the screen up when they're there, you know. They really give these fantastic performances, you know. And so you're just watching this film and you're just thinking, how does this end, right? How does this end? Where do we go? And as I say, when we reached this point, I was thinking, oh, are they gonna, right? I thought something was gonna go down. But when you actually see what does go, I don't think that. I was like, what? Yo, oh my gosh. What are these crazy motherfuckers done? What have they done? You know, it was great. Oh, it's great. And we use, you know, color and black and white, the way the film, you know, utilizes those elements, right? The flashback scenes, everything about this works. Everything about this works. And like, I think there's always a fear of the next joint from people that you enjoy, right? People that you enjoy, people that you're friendly with, and you're just like, ah, okay, let's watch this. You know what I mean? Because you're like, I don't wanna hate it, right? And then have to give an honest opinion and be like, ah, it sucks. Unfortunately, it just didn't quite work. You don't want to have to do that. So, oh man, it's like you want to see people win. And when they do it in such fantastic style, oh, it's all the sweeter. It's all the sweeter, people. So, yeah, Where the Devil Roams had its world premiere at Fantasia, you know. And I don't know. I don't have any dates at the moment for other screenings, but hope I'm going to try and get them. So make sure you go to the website, because that's where they will be. I'll place them on the website. And, you know, just the links, man, so you can follow these cats, because they are so talented. So talented, like acting-wise and musically. So go follow them on social media and then go check them out on iTunes and Spotify, people. You will not be disappointed. I am going to be rocking this album for sure. So, Where the Devil Roams, keep an eye out, because you will most definitely want to see it. So now, as promised, we sit down with Toby, John, Zelda, and Lulu. Right, we spoke to them. Whew, if you were with us, episode 188. So it is great to have them back for their new joint. This is another fantastic conversation. People, enjoy. Yo, people, if you do not recognize this awesome family on screen right now, I don't know what the fuck you're doing. Right? We spoke to them last year about the incredible Hellbounder, and we have them again for their new joint. I'm talking about, you know, the family everyone wants to be a part of is the Adams. Yo, we got Toby, John, Zelda, and Lulu. People, thank you for stopping by. Hey,
thanks for having us today, Kevin.
Hey, no problem. Yo, this new, you know what I mean? I loved the last film, right? I loved the last film. So it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's waiting for that next joint to pop. And there's always that, is it going to be good? Is it going to be as good? Like, I want to talk to him about it, but you know what I mean? Is it? And yo, you killed it. Killed it with this new joint.
That was so much to us. We just let this dog out. And comments like that are fire for the rocket. Thank you.
No, man, I honestly loved it. You know what I mean? It's one of those things, right? When you're talking to people, you want to be respectful, because regardless of how you feel about something, people put their heart and soul into it. Like I think people watch these things and think, oh, well, what? They made it last week and now it's here. Right? It can take years to put these things together, you know what I mean? And even if the shoot itself is just like, say, 10 days or something, the actual post-production, pre-production, just all those minutiae of it all, that's time. But yeah, I just think when you can actually just wholeheartedly talk about how great something is, that's always the joy of these conversations. And from the giddy up, I have to say, it's creepy as fuck, man. I just want to look inside your heads, because yo, it's the way this film opened with the, you know, we got the Master of Ceremony and the haunting poem, and then we get that opening little scene. And you just hear the, first of all, you're hearing the squishy noise. I'm just like, what the fuck is that? And then you're like, oh, shit. Oh, that's what that is. But it's the cut, right? It's the cut to then the title and then going into the next part, which is just like, you're just sitting there thinking, what? Oh, no. What have I let myself in for?
Oh, yay, that's great. I'm so glad that you pointed out the little tiny blade going in and out of the parrot, because it's like, that was so fun to put that sound in. And the tool that they use is actually like a leather puncher. So it's really nasty little thin piece of metal. And what was fun about it was when I was like, I gotta make the sound for this. Like, and so I started, you know, nailing different things with it. And I just noticed, like, oh, it's such a hard sound. It's not like a knife. It doesn't bludgeon anything. It's a nasty little thing. But that sound is so sick. Mm. And that you pointed out is wonderful.
Yeah, it's Oh, but I think there's so much detail in this film, which I love, right? And I think that's the thing, because the story itself is great, which we need to get to, because I read somewhere it came from some weird dream Zelda had, and I'm just like, yo, kid, what are you watching before you go to bed? You know what I mean? Like, we need to fix, like, you know, part of me wants to be like, we need to fix that, but another part is like, but we're getting this great stuff, so maybe we keep having fucked up dreams. I don't know, right? But there's, like, all these little details, and there's just the dinner party scene. And there's a look on Toby's face. And you're just like, when the thing is done, but there's just this look. And you're just like, yo, what the fuck? Like, it's how do you get and work out just those things? Because I think there's a level of acting, right? That I think people go to acting classes and, you know, someone will tell you, I project your voice and do this and blah, blah, blah. There's things that you could probably just, you can pick up if you practice and practice and practice. And then there's little things like the facial expression that I feel is more, you know what I mean? That's just in you, right? It's hard. You can't just teach that. Right, there's, you know, Lulu, yo, when Lulu does her thing, again, it's these facial expressions, and he's like, oh my gosh, like, how do you get that, right? How, when you're writing these scenes and you're working things out, do you go, okay, I think you need to have this kind of look, or is this just, or do you not think about it, and it just whatever comes.
So great that you point out Toby's look, because
everybody's, I mean, I think what it is, Kevin, is I don't think we talk too much about it, because then you put a lot of pressure on. Instead, I think we understand our characters to the hilt, man. And then you just, like, you're in that moment, and you just, and we have the luxury of doing things as many times as we want. And then we have the luxury of editing it. So editing the look or the take that we want. But we very much, I think, just know who our characters are. In my case, I really wanted to play Maggie. She was just in my blood and my soul. And I wanted to get under her skin. So whatever I felt after I bashed that man's head in with a cast iron skillet, it was just on my face. Was it relief? Was it joy? Was it confusion? Was it regret? I don't know. Maybe a little of all.
And Lulu had just come back from Alaska, where she had worked for 3 months chopping wood and working in a lodge. And so it's kind of like, look at this brawny kid here. Take this axe, and here's what we're going to do. And so it's like, is it acting, or is Lulu just a complete axe-murdering psychopath?
I know. They're the questions we need to ask. Like, the other thing I thought was just crazy was the fact you're watching this film and it looks like you're in these huge rooms in this big space. And I saw some of the behind the scenes shots, and you're just in a small space. And it's just like, yo, you made that little space come to life like that. Because I remember last time we spoke and you were using new camera techniques and you're playing around with new stuff. So is this just an evolution of that?
Some of that is definitely thanks to our fifth honorary family member, Trey Lindsay, who does a lot of the special effects and helped us, like, use the same people. We'd swap jackets and add to, like, a crowd. And he could really put those things in there and just be totally like, yep, I can do that. And he's very, like, creative and would make those things happen. As well as kind of what we're used to always doing, just kind of making the most from the little bit that we have, low budget, rusted wood and everything left outside looking funky, kind of doing it for us. And some cool cameras, like we got a drone and a Ronin, right?
Yeah.
Growing up, Toby's our big, you know, she's our theater mama, you know, taking us to Shakespeare and all these other things. And, you know, we wanted to make this film very theatrical, and one of the ways was doing that through our camera work, you know, setting it up on a tripod and things feeling very, like, spacious and set up in a very precise way. And even when we actually are on stage, having that be our own little special theatrical creation was very exciting.
And Trey turned us on and gave us confidence. He's, as Lulu said, our effects guy. He gave us confidence to use a green screen. We were scared of green screens because it's like, I don't know. Then computers are involved. But he gave us the confidence, and then he would paint in some backgrounds when we needed them. And his artistry, I think, is phenomenal in this movie. Every time I see him, I realize how much I love him and his artistry.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't notice any green screen stuff.
Right. He works so hard at making it honest. Mm. And also, we should really point out that our actors, we had our actors, like Mr. Tips, he had to do a lot of his stuff literally like in a place the size of a closet because it was winter and you know, that's all we had. And he went there and gave it his all. And he would be like, you know, where am I, you know, in this? And I'm like, you're on a big stage, you know? And so he went there and he really gave it. He gave us everything he had.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can see that. Right. You can see that from everyone involved. Like mm-hmm. we had some really good performances. I liked as well that, you know, with the carnival crew, mm-hmm. it was just, you know, these were people in the car. Like it, you didn't try and make a huge thing about, you know, the tattoo or anything like that. It was just like, these are our colleagues. These are our people that we're working with. And it, you know what I mean? I thought that's really, because a lot of times it's just like, oh, and we've got someone with a short eye and someone with a, you know what I mean? And then making a big thing of that when the story isn't that. The story is just these people coming together and doing something. So I just like the way, yeah, the story spoke to us.
That's really nice. You know, we feel like we live in a carny, and we feel that we're a part of a big carny, and you're a part of that big carny. And it's like, those people are a part of the big carny, so we don't want to, not we don't want to, we're just used to them. Like actually the tattoo lady, that's Razor, and she's our friend, and we feel her personality, and filming her is enough, but getting her to add that emotional aspect to the movie is what we want to do, you know?
Yeah. It's with this, how much came in the editing, right? How much of the story was in the storyboarding, and how much like with, let's cut it here and let's do this, because yeah, everything just really worked really well. Just the flashbacks, the changing from color to black and white, just all of these different elements really work well. So I was just curious how, you know, in what stage did all of that kind of coalesce?
We, again, are really lucky that we can shoot and edit that night. We always shoot and then John drops it in the computer and makes sure we have what we need. And if we don't, we can go back the next day and get it. Sometimes we have to go back several days in a row to get it exactly how we like it. So, and we never, Kevin, we never work from a fully realized screenplay, because for us, we find that the story really starts to unfurl while we're doing it. And so a lot of it really has to do with what we're discovering and the editing. Well, John, you'll answer that. You're our editor.
Well, I think Toby's right. I think that everything is organic, from Lulu and I building the sets to the way we talk about the movie. We love to paint with the camera. So at the same side is when we get home, we like the editing to be organic. So we look at it and it kind of tells you what needs to be cut and what needs to come after what. So I feel like the editing process is definitely something that is organic. The only thing that sometimes locks us into edits is music. So we love using music to help guide our narrative. And we have a certain style when we cut to music.
Mm.
So I would say if there's ever any kind of like laws, it's once we drop the music in, it's like we edit to it. And it's right. Something that we really enjoy doing.
But that worked really well. Like, as I said, at the beginning, right, you go from the noises, where the devil roams, and then you go, boom, 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 boom. And I'm just like, oh, what's happening? And it's just like, firstly, it's just like, oh shit, where can I get that song? Right? I'm digging that song. And then you've got Zelda walking, and then you're just following that kind of aspect of it. And it just, you know, it fits really well. I think one of my biggest pet peeves, right, watching different films and TV shows is the fact that people want to shoe in music. And it's just like, people, this is a sad scene. Okay. We're happy now. Yeah. Right. And I, that bugs the hell out of me. So I really enjoy when you're watching something and the music isn't that. The music is another player on the screen, right? It's this new element that is just elevating things and not trying to dictate your emotions.
Thank you for that. Really, that's cool. So important to us.
Where did the music come from? Like, are you working on music and then, you know, a film script comes along and you're thinking, oh, actually that song could work? Or do you write the songs once you have an idea for a story and think, what kind of music would go with this film or in this era or with these people?
This time we knew what our visual tone was going to be, and we wanted to have an audio tone to match. And so we talked a lot about it, and we came to the decision, like, we didn't want to have our music kind of like a ballad here and a disco beat here and a heavy metal song here. We wanted to have a sound.
Mm.
So we worked really hard on the sound, and I think it's just an amalgamation of all of our interests. And it came to me, it's a very kind of heavy stoner vibe with ethereal vocals laid on top. And it just worked for the tone of the film. And so we wrote, I think, like 15 to 20 songs in that style.
Right, right. Yeah, it's kind of funny because you'd think with the era in which the film is set, that it, you might be like an Oh Brother We're Out Now kind of style would work. Like, I think if someone told you, like, oh yeah, we're gonna set a film here and the music is gonna be like this kind of, and you'd be like, what? That's not gonna work. What are you talking about? And then you're just hearing Cut Me If You Love Me, and it's just like, what? What?
I love your attention to detail. You don't know how pounding our hearts are with your attention to detail.
Oh man, I just really enjoyed it. And it's just the way all of these elements come together. You know, the thing that I noticed that was different again from the last film was there was a kind of a musical flow to a lot of the dialogue.
Mm.
And was that an intentional thing?
I don't think it was intentional, but I love poetry. I think words are art. And so with the poem in the beginning and then the incantation that Mr. Tip says, and eventually Zelda at the end, which we finally turned into song.
Mm.
To me, poetry is music as well. And so anytime we can kind of, I'm a geek for that. Anytime we can fix that into our films, which we do in The Deeper You Dig as well, we have poetry there as well through the book. You know, I'm all for it.
Yeah, no, it really worked. Really worked. Like, what were some of the biggest challenges for this film?
That's a good question. Numb hands?
Yeah, I think numb hands, numb shots. Bodies, trying to decide at what point numb goes to hypothermia to getting a limb cut off. And generally we decided, don't ask that question, keep going.
The Chevy, the 1931 Chevy, which was our like Norma Desmond star of the movie, sometimes you weren't sure if it was going to work, and or you might have to like all push it to get out of the snow.
And this is obvious. Well, it wasn't licensed or anything too. So it was like, we're bombing down the road. And it was like, if this car breaks down or anything fucking goes wrong, we're fucked. So it was pretty funny. Luckily we were
inventive. Like Lulu, tell them about like with the branches and everything.
Oh yeah. Like the car, I think the battery died. Like this great old car that his dad owned, you know, it was convenient. It was free. It was like broken down, can drive in the snow, and these people came to watch us that day film.
Yeah.
Dynamic, and we were like, fuck. Wait, setting up real quick. And we had to get this driving shot where it looked like they were driving past things in the reflection of the windshield. And so we grabbed some dead branches off the floor, and we would run back and forth, John and I, running in front of the car window back and forth. Okay, go twist it a little bit so it looks a little different.
Yeah.
And then we'd sit on the car and press it down. So they were moving a little bit on the road.
But it's
a wicked, wonderful shot. It looks like it's cruising through under branches, you know?
Yeah, you never would have guessed that. That's crazy. But inventive, how long, like how, you know, when something like that happens, right? How long does it take for the fix to come?
You know, I think the fix is what's fun. We love problem solving. I think like, it's like a sports game. It's like, this is all just kind of a sport. You show up and you try to get things done, and problems are where the art comes in. Don't you think?
Absolutely. Like, I remember I come from theater. Whenever someone would forget our lines, it would be the best moments on stage because you had to just suddenly really be in the moment. You know, it's not like you were going to say, all right, take 10. No, you have to like think fast. And then there's this wonderful infusion of energy. So that kind of injection of creativity and impulse and energy, we kind of thrive on. So you just bring those fuck ups to us. We're like ready.
And also, it was so cold, and none of the places that we work have electricity or heat. So it's like the actors were so, we and them were so damn cold that like they, you can't act that. Like, it's like they were such great sports, but they look fucking miserable. And it's like, but everyone was like, do you want to go back to the house? You know? And they're like, no, let's just like do it. I'm so frozen, but let's just do it. And it shows on their face. And guess what? In the depression, that's the way everybody looks. So perfect.
Yeah. No, that's, yeah, there's no happiness.
No,
there's no real happiness there. You know what I mean? That's a hard life. So yeah. Now, I think the big question is, right, Lulu, do you still, or was it Zelda? I forget now. But what, are your boyfriends still good, right? Because I think I read that there's a scene, one of your boyfriends is covered in snow and your dad is murdering him. So was that really in the script? Or are you just like, I don't want her to date this dude, right? What can we do, right? What?
You know, it's so funny. I feel like maybe it was a kind of great initiation into our family vibe. I mean, my boyfriend, he's got a great look, and I think he I always thought he would be a really good actor, and he always wanted to be in one of our films. And he's like, all right, well, if you want to be in one of our films, you gotta die
through the gauntlet, young man.
Yeah. And I mean,
yeah, it's very funny because, you know, fathers, you know, love standing on the sidelines and saying things like, so what did you do like when you first met your daughter's first boyfriend? I can say I cut his fucking head off with a rusty saw. And then they're like, holy shit, I can't tell if this guy's for real or not.
No, and you're not lying.
And I'm not lying. That.
It's so funny though, but Lulu's boyfriend too worked very hard on the set for this film. So I feel like that also was a kind of initiation, having to freeze so bad out there, break some wood, you know,
and do all the drone footage.
Bully him by
the scene. He's our drone cinematographer.
Yeah, and like one day learned it. We were like, "Hey, can you? This is what you're gonna do?" And he was like,
"Right,
I don't know how to do this."
Hey, Lulu's boyfriend, come on, sit down. We need a drone operator. You're it. Let's go. Actually, we got a couple hours, so hit that YouTube channel. Figure it out.
Yep. Yep, we tested them.
Hey, but at least you know you're with good ones, right? Because they'd have just been like, yeah, we're going. I'm too busy for it. Yeah. You know what I mean? So yeah, that's cool. That's cool. You know where you stand now. That's golden.
Yeah.
Now the visual effects were great. Mm. Right. And I mean, you know, you've spoken about the good work Trey does, but it was just the hand, the leg, just all of those things look so just crazy. So crazy. Like how much time goes into kind of conceiving those shots and making them look real, because it looked like things were getting shot, right? Yeah. It didn't look fake or anything like that. So it's just like, yeah, how much time kind of goes into getting those things right?
Those took a ton of time. They took a ton of thought, because once you cut through things, you can't ever go back. So there's a lot of talking and camera setups to not make mistakes, because we didn't want to cut away. We've been on the festival circuit now for quite a while with all of our movies. And one of the things we all got turned on to was the artistry of violence and like who does it well, who has to cut away, who uses like, computer graphics. And it's like, we wanted to not cut away and we wanted to cut through real things. And so number one, we found a great prosthetics guy who would send us body parts, and they were always opened by the post office, which was really crazy. And but they always did get delivered, but completely opened. And he did a great job. So it started with that. But then you have to be really careful about when you do the act of violence, because you only have one shot.
Mm.
And so I think we fucked up a couple times, but mostly we did it and we just planned everything out.
Right. Okay. Yeah. No, it because yeah, it didn't feel like it was over the top, like you were going to the well over and over again, you know? So when these things happened, there was that, oh shit. Like you didn't see that coming. And it's just like, oh, you know, which was, I thought that worked really well with the story.
And we wanted to balance the violence out. Like we weren't just like, yeah, let's just gratuitous violence. Like we were hoping that every act of violence had either the counterbalance of either love or hard payback.
Mm. Yeah, because looking at the family, right, you didn't feel that they were this maniacal group. Yeah, it just seemed like this loving group. And then suddenly something would happen, and you'd be like, what? But then it was just like, hey, I think I saw some clothes upstairs that might fit you. Why don't you go have a look? And you're just like, huh? What is happening? They seem real chill right now.
They've got each other's backs. I mean, Seven can't even stand the sight of blood anymore, and he's married to a serial killer. But, you know, you do what you got to do to support your loved ones. And, Eve turns her mother's carnage into art. And yet the mother wants her daughter to make the big time. And, they do what it takes to stay together and love each other.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, Zelda, how did this story come about?
It came about after Lulu and I watched season 4 of American Horror Story. That's the freak show. Season, I think I was kind of young when we watched it, and the clown scared the fuck out of me. Huge credits to them for making such a great antagonist character. But you know, with psychology like major that Lulu is, you know, helped me kind of like deal with these nightmares and say like, hey, try to like think about, you know, try to rationalize this clown. So I started to try and think about, you know, maybe the clown isn't such a bad guy. Maybe he's got a family. Maybe he's actually the protagonist in another story. And then that kind of like sprung a new idea of like, oh my God, imagine like a family of clowns just like traveling on a circuit and like Yeah, they're flawed. They're, you know, they're clowns and they do messed up things, but also they're wonderful and they're a happy family. And so I brought that idea to my family, and like a lot of things, some ideas stick and some don't. The idea of a family on the carnival circuit did stick. The clown thing didn't stick. But I'm grateful that it actually didn't, because that would have been so much work dressing up as a clown every day in winter when it's freezing. I'm very happy we didn't do that.
Yeah.
So when the clown idea was just like, okay, maybe not clowns, like how was the transition to what we then get?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
I know, I remember, because we talked about this a lot, and you really wanted us to be clowns. And I kept saying, yeah, but Zelda, we're going to be like dressed as clowns for like 6 months, like all day long. Like we're going to sleep in clown makeup. And she's like, yeah, that could be hard. So what we did was, it really helped the story, actually, because this family really uses the carny circuit to travel between homicides. Like they're more hiding amongst the, you know, the hidden, you know? And so it was a perfect way, because we didn't want them to be good performers. We didn't actually want them to be like good clowns or good at anything except for her murderer. And so that worked out for us. And then we were able to still have clowns, but they were side characters. And we were able to have all these different, like, those characters, and it was helpful to the story because it showed that those characters actually were, you know, mind readers and tattooed ladies and clowns and performers, where these guys were just hiding amongst them.
Yeah. No, it was really interesting, because that was a thing, because, you know, when, like, they're performing, you're like, okay, Eve can sing, but what's Maggie and Seven doing? You know what I mean? It was just like, wait, what's happening here? Like, huh?
They're so bad.
Yeah, but it's all about Eve. And also, you know, the carnival circuit is a good way for them to keep moving after Maggie does her kills. So it's sort of like Maggie doesn't take it that seriously until the act gets bloody. And then there's kind of this strange twist there that, oh, they're getting all this attention, but they're dealing with a lot of pain, you know? And then that's just sort of the nature of, you know, people are attracted to the gruesome.
Yeah. It definitely takes a turn. Like, it definitely takes a turn, which was, it was because I think there's certain points of the film where you might think, ooh, could this happen? And the thing happens in a way, but not anywhere where you kind of thought it might go. And especially the end, because you're just thinking, okay, this is messed up. Like, how are they gonna fit? Oh, they could do this. And so, you know what I mean, we see Eve walking and you're just thinking, oh yeah, so is it gonna be that? Is it gonna? And then when you cut to, you're like, okay, I wasn't thinking that. What the fuck just happened? Like, that was a crazy way to end. Like, was that always the ending, or like, how many shifts came before we got to that?
Great question. That ending happened because it demanded to happen, is what, like, because we always keep the ending of our movies open so that we can talk about them, because like we keep saying, it's always an organic process. So we didn't know what the ending was, but as we started to see where this movie was going, we realized what had to happen. And it was kind of like, and we did have a discussion like, oh man, like this is gonna piss some people off. But it was kind of like, but it has to happen. It has to end this way. Right? I mean, what do you think about how we finally came to this decision to do it?
We kind of just had it like a burst of inspiration one day that's how it had to end. And I think we still had quite a bit of like of the meat of the movie to even like still shoot. But we knew we wanted to lead to that end, that it was the perfect, not only kind of shocking, but it could be seen different ways. I mean, you've got this I don't want to give too much away, but you've got the best of Seven has been taken away. The best of Maggie has been taken away. For Seven, it's his brains. For Maggie, it's her brawn and her body. And in the end, Eve has her perfect doll, you know? And perhaps the devil, too, will be reunited with his mortal love.
Yeah, because the underlying question of this movie is, who is the puppeteer? Like, is it Eve or is it the devil? And that final product still makes, we want two people to drive home together and both of them to disagree on what just happened.
Yeah, I think it because that was the kind of the thing with the ending, because it kind of seemed like it was a manifestation of what Eve had been working on throughout the film, which was, there's, you know, it's just all those things. I remember when Eve's talking to Mr. Tips and he's just like, your cuts are all wrong. And there's a bit where, and it was just a quick scene. It wasn't like this long scene with this big build-up, but she's got that doll and you just see it chop the hand. And then there's this look of like contentment and happiness on Eve's face. And you're just like, and then it cuts and you're like, God damn. Like, I do not want to meet these people anywhere dark.
Just make sure you give them your fire hose. Then you're fine.
Yeah, yeah. Just give them the radiator hose.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that, I think that was the other big thing, because even though these horrific things are happening, like, you can see how it's justified with them. Right? Because there was nothing to anyone that was nice, right? The people, you know, were all shitty. And it's just like, no, just go up the road and don't bother us. Or, you know, I took your farm because... And it was just like all of these bad things. So you can be like, yeah, I can see how they got there. I maybe would have talked a little bit more first, but you know, I can see how they went with that.
Yeah.
What about with the color transitions? How did you work all of that out?
Well, artistically and technically, Trey Lindsay did the transition from full color to full 1920s black and white. And I loved, when he said he could do it, it was kind of like, okay, well, let's see what it looks like. And when he showed us the first little rendition, it was incredible. So, and it was important to us, and it was very important to this was Zelda's idea. And when I first did the first edit, me and Trey didn't put it to black and white. And Zelda looked at it and she was like, why isn't it fading to black and white? And we were like, because it looks so good. And she's like, well, I don't want to see it until it fades to black and white, because that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
and why was that so important to you, Zelda? Like, what? How did that come in the vision of this film?
Yeah, I always... you know, thought, I saw it in some film, I don't know what, where it went from black and white to color because the story was coming alive. And I love that idea always, but I, having this story, things are not coming alive. Things are getting really dead and deteriorating and getting very dark. Things are going bad. So I really wanted to put that into visual form with this transition from color to black and white. And then especially with the last shot of the film, it goes back to color. And I really wanted, I think it's great because people earn that color and are like, oh, something's different. What's going on? Why is there a changing color?
Yep.
Yeah.
Kevin, Fantasia is telling us that we have to go to a different interview, I guess, apparently, which sucks because we love talking to you.
Yeah, literally.
No. This has been a joy. I was so glad I got to speak to you guys again. So, yeah, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate that.
Before you, where do you live?
I'm in London.
Oh, good. Because we're going to be coming to Fright Fest. If there's any chance we could take you to lunch or something, we would love to see you in person if there's any chance.
End of August.
Just let me know when you're coming. And I'll definitely make sure I'm free. Because yeah, no, that'd be awesome. That'd be awesome just to say hello to you guys and thank you for making such great friggin' films and music, man.
Yeah. Thanks so much. This has been wonderful. And we'll see you in London. Let's go out for some fish and chips.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm looking to see if I have your email, but I can get it if I don't from from the Yellow Bell guys.
Yeah. I'll send it across. So people, go to the website. Make sure you follow these guys because keep on turning out incredible stuff. All right. So Where the Devil's Roams, Zelda, Toby, Lulu, John, you're incredible. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kevin.
So
thank you. Right.
Peace.
Take care. Bye. People, I mean, did I lie to you? Hell no, man. I'm Charles and Eddie, baby. Now, if you missed the first conversation, if you go to the website, right, for this episode, you will find the links there. But yeah, another great one. It's the thing I love about having the opportunity to talk with the creatives, because you learn so much. Right, there's so many different ways to make films, and it's fascinating seeing how people do it. And the Addams Family are just great, all just lovely people. So, hey, make sure that you check out Where the Devil Roams. Hey, Hellbender is now on Shudder, so go check that out and follow them on social media because they've not dropped the ball once. You know what I mean? So you know that the next joint is just going to be as good. So people, hope you've enjoyed this episode. We will be back with more Fantasia coverage. And check out the main Echo Chamber pod as well, because we dropped that one the other day and there's 6 films looking at. So yeah, people, enjoy your film watching and we will see you soon. Peace.